You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Take one. Knock, knock.
Who it is?
We're Stephen and Dana, and we can't believe you found our fucking podcast.
We're so glad you're listening to it. We would never listen to it.
I don't even want to listen to it to edit it.
I don't even want to wake up in the morning.
We're Stephen and Dana, and we're
in the room.
Good morning.
Good morning. Are we all vocalized? It is 10 a.m. when we're recording this.
Nah.
Nah. Nah. Nah.
Red leather, yellow leather in the room.
Good morning, in the rumors. How are you? Cricket, cricket. We have no idea.
Chirp, chirp.
We hope you're great. We hope you're staying healthy and sane. And
if you're like on the West Coast, we hope you are safe and not melting. As my aunt put it, she said, "It's so fucking hot, my cigarettes light themselves."
I want to get that tattooed on my body. Pick a spot.
Same.
I don't have any. That'll be my first tattoo.
Oh, blank page or canvas.
We both took some trips. Let's do like a little catch up.
Yeah, we have a little bit of housekeeping. We both took some trips. You're currently in New Hampshire, and I'm just back from Maine, which required me to drive through the great state of New Hampshire.
Yes, we're New Englanding it. There's nowhere I'd rather be in the summer, to be quite
honest. It was
so
nice. We had perfect weather the whole weekend. Lobsters were cheap. Beth's was open.
He said Beth's with a B, not Meth's with an M.
Because Meth's with an M goes, not B.
Dancing.
Guess
we cried until we introduce you. No laughing.
This is a very serious podcast. Dana has moved outside and now has a backdrop of trees and actual birds and crowcuts.
Actual. There's a bear that lives here, and that bear has like three teenage bears. There's deer, there's bobcats, there's spiders.
We saw lots of spiders in Maine. No bears. What did I see? I saw little frogs. I saw my cousin chickens.
Your cousin chickens?
Yeah. Oh, since you've been up there, Jen has three chickens.
They're so domestic.
Ugh, just wait till you go back. You're going to lose your mind. We stayed in a little cabin. We didn't stay at the main house. They had a little cabin like down the road. So we would walk over there, and it's this cabin from the 50s. I mean, it has not been touched. It was like staying in a museum from 1950 with the wallpaper and the appliances, and like the cabin's not even insulated. It was rough.
So you were like on an actual, like an estate.
I was camping. Yeah. I mean, I would walk up to her house to like shower and stuff because it was pond water, but
that's legit.
It was way fun. It was way fun.
That's great.
We were living on Loon Lane.
And you got some lake time in, which I'm very jealous about.
Yeah. We bobbed around the pond like apples, honey.
Oh. I would like to bring in our guest, if I may. At this moment, I would like to introduce our guest, the one and only Internet's Broadway fan, Laura Haywood.
Yes, Laura Haywood.
It might be a stretch to say I'm the one and only Internet fan, but I am
Broadway's
the one and only Laura
Internet
Haywood.
Fan, Laura and Haywood.
I call myself the Internet's original, online Broadway fangirl.
That's what I meant. Not the one and only, the original.
Okay. Wait, real fast, because it's part of the housekeeping I wanted to do, but I'm glad that we've introduced Laura. Speaking of Internet Broadway fans, I want to give a shout out to Robbie Roselle, who has a new album out called Song From Inside My Locker. And I know you know him and love him, and we all know him and love him. And I just wanted to publicly announce my support for his live album recorded at Feinstein's. Dana and I went, not the night it was recorded, but like the first time it ever happened.
Right, like it was kind of like a premiere, if you will.
It was who's who of who's that.
I want to get that tattooed on my body.
It yes!
It was fab, and the album is fab. He sounds fab, the audience is loving it. He loves the Broadway so much, as I know we all do.
That's great.
I think you're the only person I've ever heard refer to that place as Feinstein and not 54 Below.
I'm afraid of getting sued with every word that comes out of my mouth.
Steven is a completist.
So, if they're marketing Feinstein's 54 Below, well, guess what?
That's what
you're on In the Room with Steven and Dana. It's Feinstein's 54 fucking low.
It's starting to sound like one of those insurance or lawyer groups.
Safe Flight Repair, Safe Flight Replace.
or like Connor, Gallagher and Milligan.
Celino and Barnes, injury attorney. 800-888-8888.
Wow.
Natalie used them when she I think broke her foot.
Do you remember when there was that whole Celino and Barnes challenge on Instagram where
yes!
all the Broadway stars sang that song? Molly Hager started it with her waitress castmates and it just went everywhere.
That's hilarious.
She's an actual queen.
She is.
Well, Laura Haywood, thank you for being with us.
We're 2 minutes in and I've already sung. What's happening?
That's about damn time.
Well, we vocalized.
Yes.
And I apparently am a bass.
What is up? We both have something. When this episode comes out, it's the same day as when the show that we worked on, that you hosted and I produced, called Broadway Fanatic on Broadway On Demand.
Broadway Access on Broadway On Demand.
Yeah, Broadway Access. There's a lot of peaks, a lot of valleys, but
it's
there.
It's not just a show we worked on. It's legit our show.
That's entirely true. We created it and we made it.
And we made it just like the two of us. No, I mean, of course, Broadway On Demand has provided so much support, but like from a creation standpoint, it was you and me on the Zooms, not officially Zoom, I guess. Or maybe I don't even remember, but we created something really fun. And you know, it's funny because like even thinking about something like Molly Hager's Celino and Barnes challenge, I'm like, oh my God, that would have been perfect.
That would have been a new segment.
That would have been perfect for Broadway Fanatic. Because what we do is we take all the best sort of viral meme-y internet content related to Broadway. And then I watch it and have a reaction to it. And that's entertainment, folks.
Yeah, I would say like 85% of the things that you are watching in real time are things that I have found or people have sent me. And then I get to show them to you and then you just react. And it's really great. I love it. It's such an easy little setup.
I can't wait to see the fruits of your labor.
Ah, thanks. And season one looks different than our pilot episodes, if you've already seen a few. Yeah.
I sort of forgot about those pilot episodes.
Yeah.
I sure didn't.
Good. Well, I mean, I'm proud of them. It's funny because we just set up sort of in my living room and officially season one will look, I think, so professional compared to those pilot episodes. I have a set. I have lighting.
You have a microphone. Who knew?
I have a microphone. Yeah, it's fun.
That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Remind us just up top exactly how people can access it and when.
If you go to BroadwayOnDemand.com, you can find the information for two different things. There's Broadway Classroom, which is these like master classes. And then there's also Broadway Access, which is all of their original content, including Broadway Fanatic with Laura Haywood, produced by Miss Dana. And I think that they're doing like advanced subscription signups now.
Some of it's free, some of it's paid. They have original, they're streaming shows.
Yeah, and yeah, like they're going to be streaming Broadway musicals and stuff. And then they also have a ton of original content, including ours.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Crazy. I know there's a lot of West End stuff happening with Broadway On Demand, which is
also
great.
We are responsible, I would say, for discovering some Broadway On Demand talent.
Hello.
Dana brought to me the Broadway hot dog, which is like the funniest thing I've ever seen. And I had such a strong reaction to it that we made Broadway hot dog, The Fan We Stan, which is an ongoing feature on Broadway Fanatic. And then what do you know? Broadway hot dog now has their own show.
Come on, its own show
on Broadway Access.
Our executive producer was like, wait, how do I get in touch with the hot dog? And I was like, send a DM. That's how I'm contacting everybody.
Thank God my office handled it.
Yep, that's how my office handled it. So
sign up, watch us, support us. And also, if you're making content on the internet that's related to Broadway, if you are, as I like to say, making fandom your own art form, make sure that you tag us, # Broadway Fanatic BOD. The BOD stands for Broadway On Demand.
I know there are some things that you say every episode, and that we haven't done an episode for a while, so it's a little like, what do I say?
I know. But we're just chilling today. This is not, I don't know, that feels quite formal in a way, whereas this just feels like I'm hanging out with my friends.
Yeah. I'm excited for people to watch. I know we have 10 episodes premiering on September 14th.
Get ready to binge.
Check them out. One episode is special. We have a special episode.
Yeah. If you think that you are a giant fan of something, wait till you see the guy, the world's biggest Music Man fan. And this dude, not only does he love the Music Man, but he's also a very successful television writer. Like, he was a head writer for SpongeBob for a while. He had his own sitcom for a while. And he's used his earnings to basically like buy Music Man memorabilia, including one of the 76 trombones. He actually has.
It was amazing.
One of the actual trombones. He has like costumes used in the show. He has all these production stills.
He has hats with plumes.
Yeah.
Plumes!
He has promotional things. Like, I don't think it was McDonald's, but there was some restaurant that did a promotion where they had these paper hats that looked like Music Man marching band caps. And he has the paper hat from the fast food place. Like, so we did an entire episode with him. It was like a show and tell of his fandom. Really interesting guy.
Amazing.
Completely unapologetic, which I loved. He's like, yeah, I'm a one man, the Music Man eBay store. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah. Which I totally relate to. I mean, there is nothing that I like more than collecting stuff, except maybe getting rid of the stuff that I've collected. And actually, like, that's, you haven't asked me really like, yet you haven't asked me what I've been up to, but that's such a perfect segue that I'm going to pretend you asked me what I've been up to.
Go on, girl. Go on.
Hey, Laura, what have you been up to?
Well, I have been realizing that my 500 square foot New York City apartment cannot physically hold all of the things that I've collected from Broadway shows over the years. And also, I have no income right now because I usually make most of my money during Tony Awards season. Oops. So I have been selling my collection on eBay to make ends meet. And it turns out this has actually become a business. And now I'm partnering with Broadway actors and some creatives to sell their one-of-a-kind and really rare items on eBay and splitting the profits with them and with the charity. So like I'm selling the collection, a lifetime collection from Sharon Wheatley of Come From Away. And
Past guest podcast.
Yeah, she's amazing. And so we're donating a third of the money to Broadway Cares. And right now it's just playbills and programs, although there's some really rare ones and really fun ones. But we're going to be auctioning off her costume from Cats and some other really rare.
She was Jenny Any Dots, by the
way. That's correct. She was. She also understudied Grisabella, by the way. yeah. And so we've got some exciting stuff coming up. And like, I've like launched a business. It's called Applause Shop. So go to applauseshop.com and find, and you can find stuff from my collection, from Sharon's collection. I've got a couple of producers who are clearing out their offices who are giving me stuff to, and it with a, like a, we have a very, yes, where I'm making ends meet. The artists are making ends meet, but also the commitment to charitable giving is huge. So
that is so inspired. Absolutely. And so entrepreneurial, which we just met before we did the show together. And that's something that has constantly been something that I'm so impressed by with you, is you're just like, okay, what's next? How can I wait? I need to like do this to that, to get that to like, you're so entrepreneurial. And I don't know how else to say that, because that sounds very formal, but
it's so funny that you say that, because I like, I see it as being sort of ADHD, where I can't sit still. I can't focus. I just like, I start to do something and then I get tired of it and I want to do something else. Yeah. You know, although this is something that in one form or another, I've been doing for a long time. I got my eBay account in 1998.
Like, I should look and see when I got mine.
I got it originally to buy Tori Amos memorabilia. That was my Music Man.
I'm trying to remember my first eBay purchase. I think it might have been a button from the 6,000th performance of Chorus Line.
Wow. Do you still have that?
I do. It's on my, and I'm going to say, like, this eBay business, right now it's flea market time. It's traditionally Broadway flea market time, which obviously... Yeah.
And
not
that's the thing
happen.
Is we, well, Broadway Cares is taking flea market online this year. And sure. I highly encourage anybody who wants to donate stuff to the flea market to do it. Of course, I am a huge supporter of Broadway Cares. And like I said, they're getting a big portion of this thing that I'm doing with Sharon. And she was going to throw the stuff away. So we're not taking money out of anybody's pockets. The thing is that I think right now we're at this moment where when somebody has something really, really valuable, they also, actors in particular, have no revenue stream right now. Their industry doesn't exist. And if they have something that's worth, say, $1,000, they may love the idea of giving $1,000 to Broadway Cares, but they also might be a little bit like, if there's $1,000 out there, I could really buy, like, use it to buy some groceries. And so this is a way that we can split it, and Broadway Cares will still get a few $100s and the actor will get a few $100s. I cover all the eBay fees and stuff, and then I get whatever's left over. And then, and so everybody kind of wins. The other thing is that one of the things that's so great about the flea market that I think is the reason people love it also detracts a little bit from the fundraising. And here's what I mean by that. I see playbills that would sell on eBay for $100 for five at the flea market or in a dollar bin. And that's great for fans who want the playbills. And I again, am not discouraging that at all.
But if I
put that same playbill, let's say like the original cast of Newsies, often sells for $50 on eBay. And if it's a dollar at the flea market, then Broadway Cares gets a dollar. But if I can sell it on eBay for 50, let's say 60 for the ease of math, then Broadway Cares gets $20 for it instead of a dollar. And so in that case, they're making 20 times the amount of money, you know? And so I feel like, at least as a form of justifying it to myself, this is a way that kind of everybody wins. The fans get their rare things, the performers or even just collectors who are ready to be done with their stuff can Marie Kondo their apartment and get rid of some stuff. Joy is spread in every direction. I get Absolutely. To, you know, pay my bills and Broadway Cares or whatever charity the person chooses. Like
it's all win-win-win-win.
Black Lives Matter. Yeah, we've been giving to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. We've been giving to the ACLU, to the Actors Fund. And I don't know. I'm very, very excited about it.
And it's happening all the time. It's happening all the time. Come the holidays, come, you know, whenever.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have to wait for Broadway Christmas anymore.
It's always Broadway Christmas at the Applause Shop.
Now, is that a website? Like, people can go to applauseshop.com?
It is applauseshop.com. Why was that URL available? I don't know, but it was. I just bought it for like the, you know, godaddy.com or whatever.
Yeah.
And now, right now it links to the eBay page, which I renamed Applause Shop from what it was since 1998.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is, branding. I'm going all in. This is going to be the first time I am actually going through the steps of incorporating of like getting like being an like or LLC. I don't even know what it is, but
right, S-Corp, there's so many of them.
I have a friend who has done this with a lot of small businesses. And the great thing is because right now I'm working out of my apartment and I have all the stuff, there isn't really a lot of startup costs, you know? That's I mean, great. I've bought thousands and thousands of envelopes.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Right.
Can we do a pivot and ask, where did you come from, Laura Haywood?
Oh my gosh.
And what have you done to be Broadway's original fan and have this like niche that you carved out for yourself? Where did you come from?
Oh my gosh. Well, I was born on April 28th, 1979 at Stanford Hospital.
I'm April 30th.
Yay. We're going to have a co-birthday party.
Yars.
I grew up in Oakland, California. My parents still live in the first house I ever lived in when I was born. I'm the only 40 something I know that can say that. So when I go home to visit, I actually get to go home. Anyway, this story is going to be very long if I go into that much detail. The shortish version of the story is I grew up loving theater. I thought I wanted to be a movie star. I went to a lot of shows as an audience member. I got a degree in theater history and acting. It's actually just a general theater arts degree from the University of Puget Sound in Washington. But while I was there, I suffered a really bad bout of stage fright. It wasn't just a bout. It was sort of like, I mean, to be honest, I went through a trauma and after that could not get on a stage without having like physical, like actually physically being ill. Oh, wow. So I stopped acting. And at that point I discovered radio and I just signed up for a radio show where I played a cappella hits from college groups all around the country. And oh, I'm telling you, if social media had existed then, I would have been a cappella girl. I was broadcasting a cappella songs I was one of five radio shows in the whole country that did that. And do you guys remember, are you old enough to remember Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Okay, so you know that song, which was by a group called Rockapella, who was sort of the show's mascots. They, while I was in college, they sold out the Seattle Opera House, which is 3,000 seats. And they invited me, I was 20, to come and introduce them because I was the local acapella celebrity.
No. Like,
even then, my fandom was its own thing. It was just fandom for college acapella groups. I used to be able to name, like, if you told me the name of any college, I could tell you their acapella group. But that was 20 years ago, so those acapella groups often don't exist anymore, and I can't remember. In any case, I discovered radio. I realized that was where I wanted my professional career to be, to do. That's what I wanted to do as be a radio personality. I managed to land a really prestigious job right out of college, producing a morning radio show in San Francisco, the fourth biggest market in the country. And I went from there to being like a sidekick on a different morning show, to hosting middle of the day shows, to, you know, like I was freelancing for the NFL and for Major League Baseball for their broadcasts. For their broadcasts. And then one of the producers I worked with at the NFL was he'd been hired to launch a new channel on Sirius satellite radio, which was brand new at the time.
God, remember that.
And he was like, "Have you ever thought about moving to New York?" And I said, "Yes." And so I did. And I moved there to help launch this channel that was it was really for men. Like, it was called Maxim Radio. It was based on Maxim magazine, which feels so long ago, but Maxim was really a journalistic powerhouse.
Yeah, it was huge. When magazines were a thing.
I know. And it really feels like another universe. But so because I'd been doing sports and a bunch of other stuff, plus I was able to, like, I was flirty and, you know, witty and had a dry sense of humor. I could like chug a beer with the guys and break down the batting lineup, but I could also be the cute Maxim girl next door. And so I was a producer and host on that for a while. In any case, I was basically as far away as you get from Broadway in terms of what I was doing. And because Sirius at the time was essentially a startup, I was working like 60, 70 hours a week. I didn't have time to go to the theater. And all of my friends, because I'd moved to New York for this job, everyone I knew in New York was involved in that little insular world, which, by the way, we used to refer to as locker room talk, which will give you a sense of how long ago it was, because that's a term that we don't like to use anymore. Yikes. Anyway, then I moved to Hell's Kitchen. I had been living, when I first moved to New York, I lived way over on the East Side, far away from everything, because I didn't know what the good neighborhoods were or whatever. But I moved to Hell's Kitchen and a friend of mine invited me to go to a new show called Spring Awakening. And I looked it up and saw that it was what I understood from the description was that it was a revival of a show from Germany from the 1800s. And I was like, that sounds terrible. I definitely don't want to see that. Yuck.
Yuck.
But then I thought, it's free. It's a block from my house. I can always leave it in intermission. What do I have to lose? I don't have anything else going on at night. Well, this was during previews of Spring Awakening. And I was so blown away. I mean, it is based on a play from the 1800s in Germany, but it was like the most modern musical I'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. And at intermission, I turned to my friend and I was like, I think maybe this is amazing. And I was crying and I bought tickets that night to see it again. I ended up seeing that production 18 times and meeting all these other Broadway fan kids who taught me about things like Rush and lotteries and
the theater hacks.
And I didn't know any of that stuff. This was also, to age me, in the era of MySpace. And Spring Awakening was the only show whose producers were involved in in MySpace. They had a producer, someone I still know, I'm still friends with. The name is Pun Bandu. He was 25 at the time, I think. And he was really involved in MySpace and getting and like interacting with the fans. And it was the first time, I think, that a show from the inside was interacting with the fans almost as peers.
Like using and, social media, you mean?
Yeah. Well, But social media wasn't even a term then.
Right.
You know, and social media marketing was far, like far away.
Yeah.
Anyway, cut to a few years later, I was now going to the theater all the time. The hours at Sirius had cut back. The merger from with XM, I think, was happening around that time, which kind of changed the culture. And because I had been living in the neighborhood for a while, I realized I was seeing all of these people around my neighborhood who I had just seen on stage. And I have a really good memory for faces. So I'd be like, oh, that was like Third Chorus Girl from the left who just bought the Jamba Juice in front of me. And you know what? She likes razzmatazz. Who knew? And maybe people would care. So I'd like look her up. And I didn't have anybody to share that with. I mean, there were like the kids that I'd met in line at Spring Awakening, but for the most part, I was still living in my broadcaster world. And while and I was like 30 at the time, but most of the kids I was meeting, I mean, I use the word kids intentionally, most of them were like teenagers on breaks from school, you know? And at around that same time, I read a book that I got for free through work because it was someone we were considering booking for interviews that was an anonymous, it was based on an anonymous blog about the restaurant industry. The book was called Waiter Rant. And the blog had started to sort of give the inside knowledge of what goes on in a restaurant that the customers don't see. And I think they intended, the guy intended it initially to be like, here's what we think when you don't tip us. Or this is what happens when the health department comes. But it ended up being this storytelling mechanism about his coworkers and about his customers. And it was such a compelling read. And he, all he did, he said he was a waiter and that the restaurant was in the tri-state area, but not, but didn't say anything else about what it was. And at the time I was getting taken to all of these business lunches from publicists and stuff who wanted to book their guests on the shows at Sirius. And every time I went into a restaurant, I'd be like, oh my gosh, is this the place? What it was, I found it so compelling. Mm-hmm. And the fact is actually that once I read the book, the author had already announced who he was. He wasn't anonymous anymore, I don't think, but still I got so caught up in the story that I was like, it could be this place.
This is when like anonymous storytelling was kind of at its peak, like Gossip Girl. I don't know if that was
Gossip Girl was on TV.
Yeah.
There was controversy.
Friendly enough for us to be able to, you know, it's when we all started posting our own thoughts and just kind of having, it sounds like, you know, you had this, this like secondary life outside of your broadcasting world, but you didn't have like the people to share that secondary life with.
Exactly. It was like, and so I was like, why doesn't this kind of storytelling exist for Broadway? And then I thought, well, there's nobody really, first of all, nobody's doing it, so I might as well. And I think that's what you identified as kind of entrepreneurial spirit, Dana, is that I was like, I don't know, it doesn't cost me anything and it's fun. So that's kind of my version of just play. Mm-hmm. And
it doesn't seem like homework. You know, it's that's what exactly you right. Do.
It doesn't feel like work. It feels like playing, literally.
Right.
Playing.
It's an experiment and there's not a huge cost to it.
And people say to me now, like, how did you know that this would turn out into a career? And you've mapped this out so perfectly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, I didn't. I just did whatever was fun. And there are so many other things that were fun for me in the moment that never went anywhere. But I didn't think of it as lost time or sunk cost because I got the enjoyment out of it. And that was all I really wanted in the first place. So I created a blog called, I was just going to call it Broadway Girl, but @Broadway Girl was taken on Twitter. And I knew I wanted a Twitter for this. I didn't have any interest in having a personal Twitter because I was like, I don't want strangers knowing what I'm doing, like what I had for dinner. I have my Facebook status for that. I don't, you know, and marketing, social media marketing wasn't a thing. I don't even think the word social media really existed. No. Twitter was brand new, but I thought I can promote my blog with Twitter. But @Broadway Girl was taken. So I did Broadway Girl NYC. I named my blog that too. It was like a WordPress blog or something. And then that same night, I was like, I guess I better go see shows. So I went to see Blithe Spirit, starring Angela Lansbury and Christine Ebersole.
Yes.
And my first tweet was like, going to see Blithe Spirit tonight, exclamation point. Emojis hadn't hit None. Yet. You couldn't put photos on Twitter. You couldn't post. I didn't have a phone I could post from. It was all desktop and it was all text and it was 140 characters of just type. And then I came home, I wrote a review of it. And I had, without having told anybody that I created this, I already had 10 followers on Twitter when I got home. I was like, what? How did they find me? Well, they put in the word Broadway as an interest. And because I had called myself Broadway Girl and wrote a little description that was like reviews, thoughts, whatever, like sightings from a Broadway fan's perspective, people just from a branding perspective, although I had no intention or no knowledge of branding, right. People were like, oh, I know what I'm going to get. If I follow this account, I'm going to get something very specific that I want to opt into. And now I actually teach classes on online. I call it identity because branding to me sort of feels inherently manipulative, whereas identity is about authenticity. And that's been my thing from the beginning.
I love that.
It feels like the money is taken out of it. Right. Brand is the money, a monetary term.
What I say is if you have two identical items and you want one to sell better than the other, then you turn to branding. But if you have something that's truly unique that you can, then all you have to do is tell people what it is and then the right people will find it. And that doesn't mean you'll have the biggest audience ever, but you'll avoid imposter syndrome because you haven't been pretending to be something you're not. You're not going to disappoint people because you've told them exactly what they're going to get. And I'm at a point now where when I lose followers on social media, I actually look at it as a good thing because that means the percentage of people who follow me that enjoy what I do is now higher.
I'd rather concentrated.
I'd rather have a smaller audience that truly gets it.
Nine people's favorite thing instead of 100 people's ninth
favorite thing. Yeah. And so like, if I'm not creating the content that makes you happy, go find the content that makes you happy. It doesn't have to be me. I just want everybody to like find joy in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's all to say, because of the way that I named my Twitter account and the fact that it took me no time to write whatever I thought or whoever I saw on the street or whatever, the blog went by the wayside. It was too labor intensive, but the Twitter account continued. And at around that time, maybe a year later, first of all, Broadway World asked me to write a column in character as Broadway Girl, which I did. And they didn't pay me, but it didn't matter because I got paid in exposure, which I really needed at that time. And then the shows started to catch on that social media was a marketing platform. And it was Rock of Ages that did the first, what they called a tweet up, which was like appetizers and cocktails for people who followed them on Twitter. And they sent an email blast out that said, you know, come meet your fellow Twitterers, have a cocktail, meet a member of the cast. Who knows? Maybe you'll find out who Broadway Girl NYC is in real life. That was on their email blast. They hadn't contacted me. I wasn't even on their email list. There was no way to tag people, I don't think. Maybe you could tag people on Twitter, but it wasn't until someone I followed forwarded it to me, or somebody that followed me forwarded it to me. And I was like, oh, people actually care who this anonymous character is. I just kind of did it. I wasn't trying to keep it from anybody. I didn't make any announcements, but you know, I would put on Facebook, like one time I put on Facebook that I was going to be in the audience at the Colbert show. And I also put it on Twitter. And a friend of mine was like, wait, have you been Broadway Girl this whole time? I just saw that you're both in the audience at Colbert. And I was like, oh yeah. But it wasn't until the Rock of Ages thing that I thought, oh, the anonymous thing is actually its own currency. Yeah. And that was the time, that was around the same time that I was like, all right, I'm savvy enough to know that nothing stays a secret forever. There had been a couple of Washington, D.C. bloggers that had been anonymous, but were posting things about like senators' affairs and stuff that had really blown up in their face. And I was never doing anything that controversial. But at the very beginning, I'd be like, I didn't really like this show that much. Around the time that I realized that there was some value in this mystery. I thought, okay, nothing stays a secret forever. There, people are eventually going to find out it's me. All they'd have to really do is look at the HP address, you know, and see.
Or at least operate under the assumption, you know, if you're going to put something on the internet, which we are learning is forever also.
Yeah. And I was writing in the voice of a teenager, but I wasn't a teenager. I was a savvy media professional, you know? So I thought I better not. Also, I was getting a lot of my tickets to Broadway shows through my job at Sirius. And I did not want to be responsible for burning any bridges between that organization and the Broadway community.
Because smart,
I wasn't working
so
for the Broadway channel. I wasn't, you know, I was working on the talk radio side, not on the music side, nothing to do with Broadway. It was completely separate. I'd made a deal with, with HR. HR knew that I was doing some writing anonymously about Broadway. And I was like, it will never touch my world with Sirius. I'll never mention Sirius, whatever. So I just was like, plus, occasionally I would write something kind of snarky and it would get a lot of play. Like a lot of people would react to it in a positive way, but it didn't make me feel good. Like I remember one tweet I wrote that said something like, there are only two reasons to give a standing ovation. One is if it's like a truly exceptional performance. And the other if the idiots in front of you refuse to sit down. Yeah. And I thought it was the kind of thing I'd say tongue in cheek to friends. But when I put it out there publicly, everybody, like people reacted like it was brilliant. People like snark on the internet, but even the likes didn't feel good to me. I was like, this isn't who I want to be.
Good
My
for
fellow
you.
Audience members aren't idiots.
Yeah.
I did leave that tweet up. It still exists. And I think if you search Broadway Girl NYC idiots, you could probably find it. And I left it up just because that's part of my authentic journey too. But I was like, I'm just going to only say nice things from now on. There's too much negativity in the world. And these people are creating art and I just want to be supportive and loving. And I'm not a critic.
Didn't make you feel good. It made you actively feel icky. So why continue?
So why do it? And that's the kind of thing where there are people who are like, well, that's how you get followers is when you say mean things, people follow you. And I was like, I'd rather just not be, because it wasn't a marketing plan. It wasn't how can I get an audience? It was what's fun for me.
It was quality of audience.
With a dash of like, I want to stay on everybody's good side because
of course.
I mean, really my constant fear, and this is something I'll go into at greater length with my therapist, but like my biggest issue is that I'm constantly afraid that everyone is secretly mad at me. So to be like, well, I'm not going to encourage that by not ever saying.
Yeah.
And I would go to a show and be really disappointed, but I would say, I have waited my whole life to see so-and-so perform live on stage. What a thrill. And that would be true.
There's always something you can take from a show. There's always something.
Right. And then I guess the button on the story is that after 10 years at Sirius, I realized that I was ready to say goodbye. I had 25,000 followers on Twitter. Nobody still really knew it was me. I mean, I had a nice little handful of people I called my spies, quote unquote spies, who would help me, you know, they'd be like, come to this show or here's a fun piece of news to leak or whatever. But and some of those people were asking to pay me to help them with social media on their show campaigns. Mm. And I was like, that could be my job. I have more experience at this than anybody because I've been doing it for, you know, for 10 years or five, I guess it was 5 years at that time. But I couldn't get jobs like that without telling people that I had this experience, which would mean, you know, not being anonymous anymore.
Right.
And I really talk about something that I did, that I couldn't have imagined it going better. I got to have my reveal at TEDx Broadway by doing a TED talk about basically living
a
double life.
Yes, queen.
And it was a sold out audience at New World Stages. And it was sort of already this party atmosphere and the entire industry was paying attention. So I don't know. And that led to a whole career of showing up as Broadway Girl, of doing on camera interviews to be, you know, to work. I've worked for CBS I've worked for the production company that produces the Tonys for CBS for the last 2 years. I've been at on red carpets. I've done all of this stuff that basically took my online persona and my professional broadcaster experience and mashed them together. And I've done a little social media consulting, but it turns out I don't like analytics. I don't want to pay attention to what time of day you'll get more hits. I just want people to be their true selves, to understand that, like, following their joy is more important than following any numbers. I realize, by the way, that that comes from a place of complete privilege that I can say that, because I'm like, you don't have to chase the money, chase the joy. You know, when that, like, that's, I can't say that without acknowledging that just the levels of privilege that allow so that's just an important asterisk to put on that. But but mostly what I do is as a, like, a television and radio host, except I now do it through mostly independent organizations as opposed to, like, Sirius or CBS.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I think another hugely important thing that you did, again, probably not on purpose, but I think you took the stigma out of being a fan. I always felt, especially when I first moved here back in 07, you know, there were, like, the people that did this professionally, whether they be actors or dressers or producers or whoever, they're the professionals and they're the fans. And there was not a whole lot of crossover. And, like, that was fine. That's just how Broadway worked. And now you think of Broadway existing without the fan element and it doesn't work. I mean, look at Be More Chill. Fans are making the shows happen.
That's, like, I literally have goosebumps. I am getting choked up. That's like, nobody's ever said that to me before. And I feel like you just solidified my entire purpose in the
You debunked the fan myth. Like, big Broadway stars can now, like, kind of, they've seen a successful story where, like, you can be a super, super fan of this show or this person or this whatever, and also just be, like, a chill person who's, like, not going to turn into a stalker, but just, like, thank you for your time. Thank you for that performance. Like, can we take a picture? Like, this is cool.
Well, you know, I do call myself an audience advocate sometimes. And I have told producers, I'm like, listen, you need to start treating your audiences like collaborators instead of like customers, because as soon as you start looking down your nose at them, they can feel it. And, you know, the one thing I know, and I've said this so many times, it's become kind of like a catchphrase, but theater without an audience is a rehearsal. And I, you know what, why don't I have t-shirts that say that? I'm ordering them today and they're going in the applause shop.
Yes, queen. Yes, queen.
Theater without an audience is a rehearsal. I think that I coined that phrase. I don't think I stole it from anybody. If I accidentally stole it for some, but I've been saying that for years. And that means that the audience members are the defining characteristic of theater. And so if they're not being treated as important investors, then the shows are losing out on having basically a free marketing team. Because if you make me feel like I matter to you, then I'm going to rise to that and tell everybody about this show. And that sells tickets. It might not sell enough to keep a show on Broadway, you know, like Be More Chill. It had a nice solid run, but it didn't last forever. It didn't win the Tony. It didn't, you know, it, like, but it got there. And there are other shows that, like Beetlejuice.
It set the precedent. Beetlejuice is another great example.
Like, Beetlejuice was like having mediocre sales. I mean, don't get me going on the whole, like, they were about to be evicted thing.
Yeah.
But then,
and also, like, criticism be damned. Like, what does that mean?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's subjective.
So the idea that, cause I did say own your fandom, like, Be proud of it. Be, you know, because people would, especially at the beginning, people would tweet me and say, I feel dumb when I stage door. Like, if I stage door, then the actor will never want to be friends with me because I'm like that kid from the stage door. And I, you know, should I just not, because it's embarrassing? And I was like, hell no, go stage door. Don't be a jerk, But like,
yeah,
and you know,
Broadway
and,
actors have stage doored before they got on Broadway.
Right, you hear about Jonathan Groff stage dooring to meet Sutton Foster, and like my favorite thing is to see actors before they were stars.
Yeah.
Like with
the stage door of Ragtime, and you're just like, got you. Yeah. I see your freak flag.
Actually, Christiane Pitz, who starred in King Kong and was also in Bronx Tale, she staged Patina Miller at Pippin, which doesn't feel like it was that long ago. Like to me, those feel like they're both Broadway leading ladies, but Christiane's really young. she was in college when Pippin was on Broadway, and she traveled to New York, and I did an interview with her, and I like found an old Twitter account that she basically live tweeted her journey to meet Patina Miller.
Oh, that's great.
And I brought it up during our interview, and she was like, oh my gosh, that was like, it didn't occur to her that that would still last, you know, that what you put on the internet is forever. And it was an endearing, beautiful thing. So I don't think
I love it. It's so pure. It's the purest.
So pure.
Don't edit yourself. Go get that.
I think people did for a while, Stephen. I think you're right. People didn't want to be pure. They wanted to be like aloof. And now there is this difference in culture where it's like fandom, and Dana, this brings us back to Broadway Fanatic, is like fandom is its own art form. And it has transcended just idolizing what somebody else does and becomes and become a vehicle for what we ourselves can do. Yay, fans!
Yay!
Speaking of purity, speaking of purity and not holding back, what was your first impression of each of us?
Oh my gosh. Well, I basically fell in love with Dana the first time I saw her. And you want to know something crazy?
Yes.
I seriously think of Dana as one of my best friends. And we've
me too!
We've literally never met. We've spent so much time together during the pandemic, but have never actually, we're going to meet in person for the first time.
I might actually cry because we've shared a lot. Like you've definitely shared a lot. I'm more like, let's go, like, let's record. And you're like, but wait, this is the kind of day I had. And I feel like, thank you for sharing those things.
Oh, and then you're like, can we please just get to work?
Like, I'm like, call your therapist.
Well, so yeah, with Dana, I have idolized Dana since. I'm a fan. Let's just say I'm a fan.
Oh.
Stephen, I'm trying to remember when I first met you. Was it at Mark Fisher Fitness?
I think so. I certainly didn't know you were Broadway girl at the time.
Of course
that,
not.
That
Nobody
was a, did. I remember when I learned, I was like, oh, that girl, I know her. Weird that I know her.
Well,
so it was after
I didn't
that.
Start going to MFF until after the reveal, but still a lot of people didn't know that who it was because it was, you know, I didn't change my profile picture or anything for a long time. In any case, and then you were a personal assistant to somebody, right?
I was.
Do we talk about that?
We can because A, he's been on the show, and B, I no longer have that assistant job. So it's a thing of the past and is great. And I think is the last time I saw you.
I think
was
so
with
too.
Joel.
And I was like, so Joel Grey, I went to his book event at the 92nd Street Y, and I was like, what are you doing here, guy from MFF?
I'm like, working.
And
what you doing?
And I thought, and I was like, fangirling. I think my impression of you that night was like, oh, this guy's important.
But.
Because if he's traveling with Joel Grey, then he must really be somebody. And I thought of you as like, I mean, before that, I knew your face and I probably knew your first name. And you were just
probably
like,
first run-in where like something personal got exchanged for sure.
Because at MFF, I was like, oh, he's one of the cute gay chorus boys who are in all my gym classes. And then I met you and you were with Joel Grey and you were like his right hand. And I was like, oh my gosh, this guy.
Stick with this kid.
He's doing it.
And then we took the crosstown bus. We took the M96.
I have no memory of that.
Oh, I always remember a good bus ride.
That night we took the bus together?
Yeah, because we had to get back to the West Side. So I'm sure.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It was just easier than because the yellow, the Q, Certainly wasn't up yet.
That's right. You're
so
right.
Had to get waxed. I wasn't walking.
Oh yeah. No, I totally remember that. And I will also tell you that I live in the same neighborhood as Joel, and I run into him walking his dog sometimes, and he's always so lovely. I don't know if he'd recognize me with the pink hair, but he still thinks of me as Laura from Sirius.
I was going to say, have you talked to him you've had him on shows or red carpets or something before?
The last time I saw him was when he was directing Fiddler in Yiddish.
Yeah.
And it was the final interview I did at Build Series, which is where my best work kind of lives. And I don't know whether this is public, but I think it's okay to say, I was always freelance at Build, and they stopped using freelancers. It was AOL, and then they merged with Yahoo, and then they merged with Verizon Media. So they let a lot of people go, and they stopped using freelancers. But from what I hear, and we'll just say this is a rumor because I haven't fact checked it. From what I hear, Joel said he only wanted to do it if I was the host. So they brought me back for one.
Snaps.
Fears.
I know.
Hi-ho, hi-ho.
There are 7 very well-known dwarves in history. If you were the 8th dwarf, what would your name be?
Glittery.
Glittery dwarf. You and Haley Pudshoon can be
Yeah.
Is she also glittery?
She was sparkly. You can be glittery and sparkly dwarf.
Yeah.
What would
that
you
checks
do?
Out.
I thought you were going to say Fanny.
No.
Fanny dwarf.
I wish I had more of a Fanny.
Well, because you're the original fan.
Yeah, but Fanny means something else.
Fanny also means Bryce.
Fanny it means Bryce. Booty.
Or pack.
Fanny.
I think I want to change mine to Corn Dwarf.
Corn Dwarf?
Just corny and just full of corn. And
I
love
it. I thought you meant Quarren Dwarf. Yeah, quarantine
no!
Dwarf.
Quarren Dwarf.
What would you be, Steven?
I've always been Nishi Dwarf, Nishi Nash Dwarf. I haven't thought about changing mine. Maybe for the next episode, I'll try and come up with a 2020 dwarf name. Because I've been Nishi since 2017 when this dog and pony show woke up.
Laura, thank you so much. I could talk to you for 18 more episodes.
And you know that I can talk for hours and hours on them.
But this was kind of a crash course in how you became to be. And it's so fascinating. So thank you for sharing with our listeners.
My pleasure.
And yeah, obviously you can find her at Broadway Girl NYC.
And you can find Dana and Laura on Broadway On Demand with Broadway Fanatics starting September 14th.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Very excited.
Yeah. Ba-ba-ba-ba. Bye.
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 In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazee
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, W-I-E-N-E-R, for our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com. We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at InTheRoomPod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out.
And don't forget to subscribe to In the Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.